BFFs, best friends. Oh, BFFs, best friends. They're best friends forever. Yeah.
Why, hello.
Welcome to He Saw, She Saw.
I am Keith.
And I am Corey.
And we love movies.
Just not the same ones.
So every week, we pick a movie that we love.
And one that the other one would never see unless they had to do a podcast episode about it.
And then we talk about it.
So this week, we will be exploring friendship.
And road trips.
And road trip friendship.
And road ship.
So yeah, I would say that you really get to know who your friends are, or family for that matter, when you're stuck in the car with them for a long period of time.
My parents are from Denver, and that's where my great-grandpa started a candy factory. And we would drive out to Denver about once a year.
Mm-hmm. How many
for
hours?
For about, usually it's 24 hours
to go one way. Oh my gosh.
I don't think we ever did it straight through.
The longest that I've spent in a car with my family was every summer we would drive up to Sequoia Kings Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about, if I'm driving, when I'm an adult, it's about an 8-hour drive. When my dad's driving, pulling a trailer and an entire family, it's like 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And we would usually stay in Visalia. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we stayed in Visalia during the Visalia Ransacker. I think that was way before our time.
I have
you know,
no idea
the Golden
what you're
State
about.
Killer?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And usually it was in the summertime, so it was like 9,000 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And we would stay at the Motel 6. And we would swim in the swimming pool and have air. My mom would sit in front of the air conditioner.
I do not blame her. Yeah, we used to always, Barstow was always one of the places we'd stop.
Ugh.
Which is...
It was like Bakersfield.
Very, yeah. It's Bakersfield, but not as glamorous. But it does have an amazing McDonald's with like these trolley cars and stuff like that. It's a monstrously big McDonald's.
We did a family trip. We drove to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, it's cool. It's only 4 hours. But actually it was 4 hours and like 50 minutes. Just 5 hours. Math is not my strong suit. It was funny because our daughter was awake for the entire trip until we got to the part where I wanted her to see the Vegas strip. And she was snoring in the back seat.
Mm.
And we were like, wake up, wake up.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I can't remember what it's called. But in my fraternity, one of the ceremonies, the pledge class would have to go on a trip. All the brothers would come up with activities that you were encouraged to do.
Like a quest?
Yeah, I think it was called scavenger hunt. I got to go with one of my fraternity brothers. It's like all over like the western half of the United States. We took the LA stuff. And so we went down to Thousand Oaks. And what you're always doing is you're always kind of thinking of what could I do that might impress the fraternity brothers. And so I can't believe we did this. We went to Tommy Lee's house from Motley Crue.
Oh.
And we had a bottle of Jack Daniels. We were like, let's just go to this person's house and ring
see
the doorbell.
If he wants this random bottle of
yeah, and just see if we can grab liquid. A drink with him. And he had an intercom.
Did he talk to you?
Yeah, we talked to him. And he... just like, hey, and big fans, and we just have this bottle of Jack. And he's like, oh, dude, thanks, man. I appreciate it, but I'm here with my girlfriend. And we're like, oh, okay. We'll just leave it for you. And he's like, all right, thanks. She wasn't famous yet.
Was it Pamela Anderson?
It was Pamela Anderson. Mm-hmm. Would have been. But with Tommy Lee, who knows?
He was probably just like shaving his dog.
Yeah, he was probably bored and was probably like, I don't need to meet more frat guys at this moment.
Mm-mm, at my house.
Too. At my house that you somehow found.
Yep.
And have decided to disturb me. But it was stupid to do. Uh-huh. It was borderline rude. But I think we did it as respectfully as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't. We were just very quick. Would you like to? No? No problem. Big fan. Thank you so much. We're leaving the Jack for you. See you later.
It's like the time that John C. Reilly was sitting in the bar at my improv theater.
At the Red Fox Room.
At the Red Fox Room. Someone said, John C. Reilly's sitting at the bar. And so all of us were nonchalantly just like kind of walking through the bar. And you and I went and sat like directly across from him at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he got up, we were like, hey, can we have a picture? And he was like, oh, no, man, I'm going to go. And we're like, okay. Such a cool restaurant. It had like
it's the old steakhouse
someone's
type.
Fireplace, for, like some famous person's fireplace from the 1920s. Like,
yeah, it was like it looks like a speakeasy. And,
yeah, wood paneling, red booths, just really like.
Decent steak.
Yeah. So, no, I
but totally like those steak dinner clubs that you used to.
Yeah.
That are still in, like, Wisconsin and nowhere else on the planet. But
so what's this podcast about?
road ships.
Road ships.
And friend trips.
Yes, and friend trips. You get to watch Keith, Romy and Michelle. Don't roll your eyes at me. Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
Mm. Yeah, so I do not like movies where the main characters are just embarrassing. Like people who do embarrassing things who don't realize they're doing embarrassing things. I do not like those types of movies.
What if they don't care?
Still, I'm like, so I've seen like 3 minutes of this movie. Uh-huh. Maybe 10.
It works out, Keith. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know it works out. But still, I'm just like, ugh.
Janine Garofalo's in it.
That's cool. I like Janine.
She's my fave.
Yeah, Mira and Lisa, they're great.
Oh, first name basis.
Whoops, yeah, right.
Lisa
Kudrow, Mira Savino. Mm-hmm. I know there's a couple guys. I can't remember who the guys
are. There's a surprise guy that I found out about in recent years. And I was like, what? So that's what you get to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to, you slipped in another superhero movie. I'm sorry, a movie that happens to showcase a superhero.
Yeah, Logan, which many people argue that it is one of the best, if not the best, superhero movie. So
wow.
It's really character-driven.
And it's not even an MCU movie.
No. It does star Marvel characters and Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart, who are by far the best parts of any of the X-Men movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're basically center stage for them. I think it's pretty good. High probability you're going to do some crying. But the acting is excellent. It's kind of a heavy movie. So you'll see it once and be like, okay, all right, that was a good movie. And
good, and I will watch it, and I will see if there's layers.
It'll be good to watch.
Well, you know, you have been right more times than not.
Thank you.
I've been in this area, sorry.
Wow, that could have gone a few different ways. But
that was what?
Yeah, no, and I've watched some. I've gone to like some of these movies that I did not think I would like. So let's see how it goes. Romy and Michelle meets Logan.
Okay, Tucson, here we come.
Oh, Mike, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Well, I would just like to start by saying I am sorry.
Wow.
I didn't realize how cringeworthy this was. Mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking about the cringing. Mm-hmm. And then as we were watching it, I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Keith had to get up at one point and watch from the hallway. I don't know why watching from the hallway is more comforting, but I guess to get away, put some distance between it and yourself.
Yeah, it's just I don't like cringe when people are like doing stupid things or people say embarrassing things or made to look like total idiots. So
yeah, it's because you have a tender heart and you don't want anybody to feel bad.
That is true. How does your favorite movie hold up outside of the cringe?
It's still my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many fun lines that I remember from, you know, watching it 400 times with my friends. And, you know, again, the costumes are amazing. I love the friendship between the two of them, and this movie kind of made me miss having like a friend that you've known for years that you're close to. I mean, I have a lot of friends that I love. I have a lot of friends that I love that have moved away. Everybody moves to New York, Chicago, or LA. And so my friend like that, the person who you're really close to and has seen you in all different phases of your life and you've known for a really long time, longer than your husband, she moved to Texas. Nowhere near a Trader Joe's. My Trader Joe's I could walk to. Her Trader Joe's she has to drive 45 minutes to. And I was like, why would you move somewhere where you're not near a Trader Joe's? It's funny because we actually talk now more than we did when we lived near each other because we text all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she'll text me a picture of the sunset in Texas, or I'll text her a picture of Trader Joe's and go, Yeah, I just love this movie. This is like a movie that you put on when you just want to feel good.
Yeah. All right.
Except for you, because it made you feel a bit awkward.
Cringe.
Do you have a pitch for this movie?
Sure. Two beautiful but somewhat slacking BFFs try to trick their hometown of Tucson into believing they are living successful lives in Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
Wow. That's a lot of consonants.
It is.
In that sentence.
That was
a lot of sibilance.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to get your mouth around. So,
I think I know how you feel, but your poker face is just amazing. So,
thank you.
Oh no. So I guess we'll see.
So some cool basic stuff out of the way.
Okay.
So this was directed by David Merkin, who directed Heartbreakers, which we had what episode like 9 or something like
that. Our 10th episode. For our 10th anniversary.
There you go. He also is one of the prolific writer-directors of The Simpsons.
Oh, that's why there's that clip.
Yeah, there's a clip of The Simpsons movie. In the middle of one of them that he wrote.
That makes sense.
It was written by Robin Schiff, who was a Groundlings teammate. Of Lisa Kudrow. They created a show that evidently traveled around a little bit called Ladies Room.
Oh, nice. I didn't know about it these came two. Out of that. I was a groundling. Well, yeah. I took classes.
Took class. Year and a half?
Almost 2 years. Almost but two it years. Takes 3 hours to get there. The class was 3 hours. It takes 3 hours to get home.
Yeah.
So, and I joined an improv team in San Diego. That's my life as a San Diego improviser.
So, and this is all going to center around a 10-year reunion. High school before used to be a much more... the anchor of your experience.
It was like a microcosm?
It was like you created your own little universe mm-hmm. before you had to be a successful high school person. Mm-hmm. And now with social media, you know, why would you hang out with people you don't necessarily have stuff in common with when it's easy online to hang out with people you do?
Right.
And so, which actually is a little bit like my high school experience. I did a lot of different things.
Who were you in high school? Keith?
In this movie, although I'm nowhere near as successful, I would probably be a version of Sandy, but...
definitely not as geeky.
Yeah. Well, kind of, at times. So, you know, because I really liked comics and wrestling, which had to be completely hidden.
But were you when a I was mess? In high school.
Yeah, partly, yeah. Oh, okay. My best friend, John, I used to hang out with him all the time, mm-hmm. and he was a popular kid over at a rival high school. The high school wasn't my social life. My social life was hanging out with John and his friends. So the 10-year reunion was really crazy because I also went through puberty when I was about 28 or so. And so that's, again, why I always really enjoyed Captain America is I completely understood mm-hmm. being Steve Rogers. I was Steve Rogers in high school. Mm-hmm. I could play soccer, so you didn't want me to kick you. But I was like... I was Steve Rogers in high school, but inside I was always Captain America. Mm-hmm. And so at my 10-year reunion, the outside caught up with the inside. There was at least 3 times I can think of off the top of my head that I was just talking to somebody. And then like midway through the conversation, their eyes would dilate and you could tell they were thinking, oh my God, that's Keith. Like, so yeah, so the 10-year reunion is always weird. It's the judgiest of all reunions.
Yeah, I was really afraid of that at my 10-year reunion. I kind of had a different high school experience because mm-hmm. I went to the performing arts school. We didn't really have like a social hierarchy that we worried about too much. It was just like, what is your interest? There was a lot of crossover because like I was the theater kid, but I also discovered that I loved photography. Mm-hmm. And so I had a lot of goth photography friends. I kind of had a separate group for each like different period that I was in. Like I would have, you know, like, oh, now I'm going to this class with these people. Yeah. But so my 10-year reunion, mm-hmm. I was really worried about it being judgy. But it was just, it was really nice because it was just, it was everybody and they were just who they were and no one really cared about, oh, did you make it to Broadway? Like, I mean, mm-hmm. a few of us, like Sarah Ramirez, she wasn't in my class, but she was around when I was there. And, mm-hmm. you know, she was in Spamalot and won a Tony and Grey's Anatomy. And we were there to, like, see each other and talk. And mm-hmm. there was this DJ and he was so friggin' loud. That we all ended up outside. Nobody wanted to dance. We want to, like, you know, mingle.
Yeah, yeah. We're in that in-between generation. Like, Romeo and Michelle is, like, they're at a hotel. There's yeah. a DJ. It's basically a mini prom.
Yeah.
And that's what reunions used to be. Mm-hmm. And now, thankfully, you know, like the difference between my, like my 10 and 20, completely different. Yeah. It's like, why is there a DJ? Yeah. We're not going to do a king or queen.
Yeah,
we're not
going to have,
there's no awards for like, you know, it's like just
living your life.
Yeah. It's just like, it's just hanging out.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's important that this movie is based off of the 10-year reunion because
yes,
exactly. we still have that. Hey,
we are doing a movie, aren't we?
Yeah. Eventually.
Okay. So tell us about the movie.
So therapy's over. So we start off on, I believe, Venice Beach, this incredible studio apartment that I don't think there's any way that they could afford.
That's
like
right
on the right on the beach. We see Romy, played by Mira Savino, mm-hmm. is a cashier at a Jaguar dealership, and Michelle, Lisa Kudrow, is unemployed, but they love their life. They design their own clothes, which are quirky and cool. They watch Pretty Woman all the time. They go out to clubs, you know, and they just don't quite fit in, but they're having a good time. Yeah. Like, you know,
they're in their own world.
And so what happens is that Romy one day is at the Jaguar dealership as a cashier when she runs into an old classmate who's kind of semi-goth and always pissed off, Heather Mooney, played by Janine Garofalo,
I love
who has never been better than in this movie. Heather obviously has always had lots of issues, mm-hmm. but she's rich now because she's invented fast-burning paper for cigarettes. I believe the slogan was something like twice the taste and half the time for a woman on the go. Romy and Michelle are both oblivious for the vast majority of this movie. So Heather is passive-aggressively making fun of her, not in a mean way, just in a, like, I can't believe this conversation is happening way. And then, so Heather asks Romy if she's going to go to the 10-year reunion. Not that she would. She would rather put the cigarette out in an orifice, but she's not going to, I'm not going to say that on the podcast. Romy is like, oh my gosh, it's like, you know, it's been 10 years. That gets her to reminisce with Michelle about high school. And so they talk about some of the good old days, but they also...
They're going through their yearbook.
Yeah. And they clearly had fun in high school. But as they start to reminisce, we learn that they were a little bit of outcasts.
They were... definitely in their own world.
They're always kind of in the shadow of this group called the A group, which is the popular kids.
Well, they're harassed by the A group.
Yeah, occasionally harassed by these girls who they're obsessed with. And they're the...
The queen bees.
Queen bees.
The queen A's.
The white girls who obviously have some money and they're cheerleaders. And, you know, Christy, the main A group girl, has a boyfriend named Billy who Romy is totally in love with. Heather was a puppy dog following after Sandy, played by Alan Cummings, who is just absolutely in love with Michelle, and Michelle could not care less.
Yes.
Like, anyway, so we realized that they were picked on a lot, so Romy is a little concerned. She wants to, like, again, like any 10-year reunion, wants to show how much better she is than she used to be.
And
how she was cool all along. And Michelle...
Like, look at our lives, like our lifestyle, like how we live.
It's so funny because we live in one of these places where, you know, when I talk to people who moved to San Diego, it's very much one of those things where people are like, no, you don't understand. I live in Cali now. And you're like, dude, no one calls us Cali.
Please stop.
Stop. Just stop. I live in Diego. We just, I will kick you out. I will kick you out of the city if you call it Diego or Cali one more time. It's like no one here calls it that. So they're from Tucson. And so to them, it's like being a bum in LA is better than being the king of Tucson.
Right.
Which is ridiculous. So Michelle wants to go back just to have fun because she just has fun no matter where she goes.
She's just herself.
And so they say, okay, well, if we're going to do this, then we need to, A, lose weight. They don't have any weight to lose, but we need to lose weight. And we need to, Michelle
needs a job.
But then
we wouldn't see all those fantastic exercise outfits.
Oh my gosh. Do not wear any of those exercise outfits. Like on a treadmill with heel sneakers. Anyway, lose weight. Michelle needs a job. And they need boyfriends. And so we have several scenes which are just huge fails as Michelle tries to get a job and Romy tries to get boyfriends for them. And then they're kind of deflated and they're reading through these fashion magazines because they're all about fashion.
Well, and she has every Vogue since for the last 10 years.
Michelle's like, wow, all these successful business women are so pretty. And Romy's like, those are models. That's why.
Oh, I was wondering why they look so familiar.
Right. And so that makes Romy go, hey, we're so good at fashion. Let's just make businesswoman outfits.
We'll just say we're successful
business women. So Romy comes up with this way to borrow or use Jaguar from the dealership. So they realize they need to have a backstory on why they're successful business women, what business they're in.
They didn't think it through.
Yeah, like most things. And so they decide, well, we should just have invented something that everyone knows and likes, but no one knows about. So they're like, okay, well, we'll say we just invented Post-its. But in the midst of coming up with this backstory, they start to get in a fight with each other because Michelle feels like Romy's not respecting her contributions
to Post-its.
So they have this big fight and about who's the Mary and who's the Rhoda, and which is some
Mary
girls.
Tyler Moore.
Yeah.
And Rhoda.
Yeah. Some girls TV show. That.
Is that a girls TV show?
Yeah. No, yeah. Mary Tyler Moore has a big male following. Anyway.
and asthma.
But you kind of get it. Yeah.
Mary's the cute one and Rhoda was not the cute one. So that's the argument.
No, I got
that. I'm the cute one. I'm the Mary.
So there's this underlying tension between them. So they're like, okay, fine. Once we get to Tucson, we're going our separate ways. And it's like, fine. So they show up. They go into the reunion. They both do the Post-it story. It works like a charm. Everybody loves them.
They know the formula for glue.
Yeah, Michelle knows the formula for glue. Romy ends up hooking up with Billy, her old crush. Sandy shows up and he's super rich. And he has this really weird face, like Martin Short retaining
Melted.
Water. You know, it was just like,
well, that
okay.
was his present to himself, was that he bought himself a new face after his first million.
So Michelle is with Sandy because everything's different about him because he has a new face and he's rich now. Romy and Michelle tie for the most successful since high school. Then we fast forward 70 years later, and they're not friends anymore. So Michelle has a call to Romy on her deathbed, and they fight about being Mary and Rhoda's again. And it becomes clear that this is just a fever dream of Michelle. And so she wakes up. They go in to the...
For reals.
For realsies. Like they had planned, Romy and Michelle make their own separate Post-it story, and no one believes them. It gets really bad when Heather shows up, who... Kind of surprised
she
to see Heather.
She wasn't supposed to go. But since Michelle and Sandy aren't together, she figured.
Yeah, she might as well show up and see what happens. Heather completely blows up Romy's story.
On accident.
Yeah, because she's like, what are you talking about? Like, this is like the easiest case in business school. We all study it. You clearly didn't invent it. Romy is incredibly embarrassed in front of the A group who she was trying to explain this to. Michelle comes to her aid and kind of sort of tells off the A group.
She's like, at least we didn't get fat.
Yeah, and they're pregnant. But yeah, they make up to the side. They're like, okay, we're best friends again. Okay, look, we told a couple people each. Right. That's a ridiculous story. It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. Walk back into the room just to hear Christy completely annihilate them on the loudspeaker in front of everyone, just totally humiliates them. And they just said, fine, we're just going to have fun because we just always used to have fun. Let's be ourselves. And so they wear the iconic Peek and Blue outfits, like the Fembot, basically, outfits. Yes. They come back in. Romy gets the ultimate tell-off. Mm-hmm. On Christy. Christy comes back. I'm like, you guys are ridiculous. And then one of her fellow A group girls who doesn't like them anymore is actually a fashion editor at Vogue. And it's like, actually, they're not bad, which is the highest praise possible from a Vogue editor. Suddenly, all the girls at the reunion, except for the A group, races up and wants to know all about their outfits.
They designed them together.
Yeah. In the midst of this, Sandy shows up. He's invented some new form of rubber. That's not important.
It's and, in every shoe.
Yeah. So he shows up with a helicopter that drops down at the front and just makes a beeline for Michelle. Mm-hmm. He's like, and Michelle is like, okay. Because again, he's rich now. And so she's like, I guess you're kind of successful.
But I have a live-in masseuse, a staff of 24, and a house in Aspen in New York.
And Acapulco and Malibu. And
if you call that successful.
Penthouse in Manhattan.
Then yes.
But I don't have you. So he asks her for a dance. And she says, only if Romy can dance as well. So they have this interpretive dance they do to time
that
after time.
That I still remembered because I was doing it with them.
Yes.
Were you impressed?
Oh, incredibly. Which was important because when we had flashback earlier to the prom, Billy, Romy's crush, had ditched her, had said he was going to dance with her. So this song, time after time, and then ditched her. And then this is not that type of dance. This is an interpretive modern. Mira Savino is doing all of this like wannabe ballet stuff. And Lisa said the whole point of that choreography was for me to do as little as possible.
I could tell because she was just doing all the ballet, like she was doing jetés and like.
Yeah, like Mira Savino is going off and on point, and Lisa is just kind of
like rolling around on the floor.
Standing there and getting picked up every once in a while. So, of course, to huge applause, as soon as Heather had seen Sandy come in. Mm-hmm. She was like, took one look and was like, oh my God, what was I thinking? And like, is out of there. And so she ends up going outside, and there was this one particular guy who just wouldn't even say anything to her, but would just kind of torment her, would just always like flick a cigarette over when she needed a light.
Yeah, not even give her a light.
So when she was outside and about to light her own cigarette, this guy shows up and immediately gives her a real light this time. Mm. And they have a conversation, and it's Justin Theroux in one of his. In his, I think, his earliest role. So she semi tells him off, but is like, oh, heck with it. Let's go talk.
I like the hat.
Yeah.
Pick up the pace.
Romy and Michelle have had the most ultimate reunion ever, but it's not over yet because they're outside waiting for Sandy to get in the helicopter so they can fly off. In the midst of that, Romy finally runs into Billy, who's puking in the bushes. And we find out that Billy is married to Christy. They have three kids, and he's just not happy.
He's an alcoholic.
And he's working for Christy's father. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, hey, let's get a room. And so Romy is like, sure, why don't you go get a room and then take all your clothes off and I'll be right there. Just so that he can be stood up like she was stood up. Romy and Michelle get in the helicopter and Sandy's like, I'm in a kiss, right? And Michelle's like, oh, yeah, oh, of course. And gives him a little kiss. And then go on the helicopter and they fly away. And as they fly away, they look down and Heather is fully making out with this cowboy dude who tormented her earlier. And then they fly off. And then the final scene is they're on Rodeo Drive with a boutique called Romy and Michelle's. And they're like, oh, wow, we're successful, we're thriving. It's like, oh, you know, we can totally pay back Sandy now. And they're like, we're a couple of years away from that. And they end badly folding scarves. BFFs forever. When it comes to the good things about this movie, I have never seen a better representation of Gen X than Janine Garofalo in this movie. She completely sums up the whole generation in one performance. So she is by far the star of the movie for me. Like every time she opens her mouth, it's funny. Mm-hmm. And most times when she opens her mouth, it's like you can't stop laughing. Mm-hmm. Like she's just the perfect, you know.
Cutting,
bitter, passive aggressive, total Gen X thing. So she was amazing in it. The soundtrack, which was 5 times louder than the rest of the...
Oh, my God.
I don't know
I kept having to turn it up and down because it was like midnight.
I'm not sure which junior high schooler was in charge of sound design. But
it was probably the DJ from my 10-year reunion.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm sorry to... I don't know anything about sound, so... But we clearly don't know anything about sound. But it was very clear, you know, that the soundtrack had to be 5 times louder. It also was one of the most expensive parts of the movie. It was over $1 million for the song rights.
Yeah.
So tons of songs I hadn't thought of from like the late 80s, early 90s.
I can imagine.
So great soundtrack. It did remind me of kind of like how like in your 20s, you're on your own kind of like little world and you're trying to figure it out. There is a good friendship between Romy and Michelle. I found myself kind of wanting to root for them. I really didn't find either of them very likable. I don't like it when a movie says like, oh, it's horrible how these people like above us treat her so poorly. But yet they treat people below them poorly. Cameron Manheim is just like a mat the whole movie. That hypocrisy is always just rubs me the wrong way. It wasn't totally pervasive, but it did come out every once in a while.
The A group definitely was making everybody's life miserable. Romy and Michelle, they were just in their own world, but just the circumstance of Sandy in love with Michelle, and so that made him miserable. And then Heather was in love with Sandy, and that made her miserable. So I kind of took it as just living your life. We have different perceptions, and we put that on different people, and maybe they didn't even know.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
We didn't know if we were making other people's lives difficult because we're busy living our lives.
Right,
that's basically
right.
What you're saying.
Yeah. The characters are a bit shallow, though, I will say. Like, Michelle's very, you know, likable, and she says funny things. But it seems like Romy's kind of like the one that drives the relationship and has all the ideas, and Michelle just kind of goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, Michelle's like, I let you have all the ideas. And Michelle kind of is like, she's operating on a different level and she doesn't care. She just wants to have fun and be herself.
They're just so vapid.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of it is popularity is not important, but that everyone's watching them get in a helicopter at the end and thinking that they're amazing. And it's like,
and they haven't really changed.
And they're so self-centered outside of their friendship.
Yeah, because Michelle walks up and Toby's like, oh, it's so good to see you. And she's like, uh-huh. Instead of, oh, it's nice to see you too.
With Michelle, it's like, would Sandy really pine for her after he has like the world as an oyster? And like, Michelle still doesn't like him.
Right.
She likes that he's rich.
Yeah. That always kind of bothered me. I'm like, well, I don't really think she likes him. She's just like, okay, cool, you're rich.
If he had shown any interest in her besides the fact that she's cute, I would have been much more on board for that story. Anyway, story was very simple, which can be okay.
Well, it's definitely based off of characters that were created.
It does feel like this is an improv show.
Mm-hmm.
That we're putting on film. Very character driven.
But character type, not deep level character.
The point isn't the story. The point is to watch Mira Sorvino and Lisa Kudrow improv off mm-hmm. each other in funny ways. The funny thing is they're both brilliant. Mira is a graduate of Harvard. Lisa Kudrow majored in biology and graduated from Vassar. The whole point of the movie is that they're dumb, but their nicknames for each other are Smart and Smarter.
Aww.
It's just kind of sad to me that's the movie that was made. And yeah, they're fashion savants, but I don't know. I just feel like there's a much more interesting movie to be made. But again, this is one of these movies that's totally not meant for me. Girls of my generation, I totally understand why they're into it.
Yeah, I mean, as a fun movie that you don't have to think too hard and there's funny lines.
And friendship and everybody friendship. Everybody can relate to the idea of being an outcast at some form or fashion.
Trying to fit in. Yeah.
And wanting to fit in and having, you know, and those best friendships are crucial even when they're not, you know, around anymore. It's like, you know, it's always good to remember those. Before I give like a final rating, is there anything that you want to bring up about the movie?
I thought it was funny that I had never noticed this at all before. They're having a pity fest, and so they're like eating, you know, candy and cookies and snacks and all this junk food. Mm-hmm. And so they pan across the coffee table that's full of all of this junk food. And you and I turn to each other at one point and go, is that a spiral ham?
Yeah, when I was doing research afterwards, also in that scene, there's several, Mara Savino at that point was dating Quentin Tarantino.
Oh.
So his fictitious cigarette brand is in there. His fictitious burger place is in there.
I noticed the burger place. There's a half-eaten spiral ham.
Yeah, which is hilarious. And there are definitely hilarious parts of this movie. Like, I don't like the obvious body dysmorphia that's part of it, but the whole, like, hey, I just tried a new diet of... what was it? Gummy
candy
bears
corns,
and
candy gummy
corns.
Bears.
Yeah, and jelly beans. Yeah, there are several really just kind of like funny little bits of the movie. Mm-hmm. So, do you know who originally was Romy?
Who?
Toni Collette actually was originally going to be.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Toni definitely would have taken a different. It would have kind of gone a different direction a little bit.
So, Romy has this weird way of talking, and I always wondered if that was something she was doing on purpose.
It was something she was doing on purpose, and it's the reason why Toni didn't feel comfortable doing it, was that she wasn't comfortable that she'd be able to maintain the accent through the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of accent that was.
Yeah, it was like a...
It wasn't Valley Girl, really.
It's Valley Girl, but not. You know,
it's like a weird, like, surfer hybrid Valley Girl.
Yeah, it's very consistent throughout. So I'm guessing she has a friend who used to speak like that.
Uh-huh. I bet it's a surfer.
Yeah. Would you like to hear my rating on this movie?
Let me get my Lady Fair cigarette and burn it down real quick. Okay, yes.
It's not a movie in any shape or form or fashion for me. So the things that I would want to see in it, mm-hmm, probably wouldn't make it the movie that it is and doesn't hit the target audience they would like. Mm-hmm. So I'm fine with any. I will never make fun of anybody who likes the movie. I will not disparage the movie. It's just
not your movie.
Double thumbs down for me.
Oh, so, man.
So, yeah.
I mean, I knew that.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Why are you sorry? It's your opinion.
Well, yeah.
I double thumbs down a movie from you.
Yeah.
We won't say what it is because you need
you
to
need
listen.
To go back into the back catalog.
The back catalog.
So, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I love you.
I cut my foot earlier and now my shoe's filling up with blood, so I have to go away.
You paid a whole $1 for that? To be what he is, Joey. Can't break the mold. There's no living with the killing. There's no going back, right or wrong. It's a brand. A brand that sticks. Now you run home to your mother. You tell her everything's all right. There are no more guns in the valley.
Are you trying to make me cry?
It's obviously from Shane originally, but very poignant for this movie.
Well, now that I've had sufficient time to recover,
mm-hmm,
after viewing this, I would put it right on par with the time that we went and saw The Help. Everyone in the theater had the credits were rolling. Everyone had gotten up and left, and I needed several minutes to collect myself because, mm-hmm, I was bawling. I couldn't go to sleep after watching this mm-hmm, because I was crying so hard. And mm-hmm, then I was doing my notes, and I started crying again. Oh, what did you do this to me for?
Man has to be what he is, Joy.
Oh my God. Okay, so. Keith.
Yes.
Did this movie hold up for you?
Yeah. It's very good. It is the only real Wolverine movie. There is a brutality to Wolverine that's very problematic. It's a problem because the character is vicious and brutal, and his powers, unlike every other superhero, are just completely deadly. What I like about this movie is that if you're going to do Wolverine right, you need to show all that brutality. Mm-hmm. And the responsibility as a filmmaker, I think, of showing that brutality is to show the issues with that brutality. I would not argue with someone who says it's the best superhero movie of all time because it's true to the character. You can't make the essence of Wolverine, why people really like the character, without making it a rated R movie and without making it absolutely brutal. And
brutal it was.
It was.
It was one of my notes.
From the get.
It's like, yikes.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. Why the eyes and the forehead?
I could go more into.
No.
Okay.
Do you want to hear my pitch for this movie?
I would love to hear your pitch for this movie.
So my pitch assumes that you have the background knowledge.
Okay.
Because I just didn't have the energy to make it for accessible for all.
Oh, would you like background knowledge on the character?
No, I
of,
don't need
oh,
it.
Okay, just checking.
This is probably going to be my worst pitch. This movie made me a wreck, so I don't know. I'm going to probably be a wreck talking about it. Logan is a mutant that has fallen on hard times. Oh, my gosh. While trying to protect and keep Charles Xavier alive, he comes across a young mutant girl who he begrudgingly protects and takes to safety.
There you go.
I'm already crying.
That's great. Now, I would be interested to hear your definition of what is a mutant.
Based off what I know about the X-Men?
Mm-hmm.
So some are born with mutant powers that make them either like a weapon or a superhero, and some of them, like I guess Wolverine had it installed.
That's so close. That is super close. So a mutant in comic book language just means that somebody has mutated.
Like all superheroes.
So yeah. But before, in the Marvel universe, who created this idea of mutants, everyone just got superpowers because of radiation, because that was the time. And I think basically after a while, Stan Lee was just like, screw it. And just sometimes people are just born with the power.
So they just have it.
So we don't have to explain it. There is so much I could say, but to sum up, mutants came to become a analogy of puberty and also was used by Stan Lee to talk about civil rights directly.
I was going to say, is it because of...
So because they're born a specific way. Ugh. And so Professor X is actually modeled in many ways after Martin Luther King, whereas Magneto is modeled very much after Malcolm X, because they have two different theories of how to make civil rights happen. In the comic book lore, Wolverine's mutant power is primarily his incredible healing factor, like incredibly...
So he was a mutant with incredible healing properties, and then they put more stuff in him?
Yeah, and so because of his healing power, they painstakingly went in and coated all of his bones with this made-up material called adamantium. He's the only one who would be able to survive that procedure. Originally, the knives were in his gloves.
Oh, and so, not in his skeleton.
So what they changed it to later was that the knives kind of came out of his skeleton.
Uh-huh.
And so for the first few decades, we thought those were just installed to make him a killer because of the Weapon X program, which is what gave him the metal skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
We find out...
My eyes are rolling.
I know. We find out later that he had the claws to begin with, that he actually had bone claws.
Oh, that they just enhanced?
That they just enhanced by coating it with the adamantium.
And the adamantium is poisonous to everybody?
So it is a metal. So
lead?
Yeah, so he doesn't know exactly what's wrong with them.
Yeah, because the movie starts and he's sickly and he's coughing and something's wrong with him. And I was like, does he have cancer?
I don't think he ever mentions in the movie, but in the comics, he's hundreds of years old. He's uh-huh. He's at least a couple hundred years old.
Oh.
And his healing factor just keeps him young. But at this point...
Is it because he's old now? Like he's reached the end
so at
of
this
his
point,
lifespan?
He's like, yeah, at this point he's like 200 years old. So uh-huh. he still has a healing factor, but it's not as strong.
Okay.
And what the...
And then he's got lead poisoning on top of
and
that.
And then, yeah, essentially what he says towards the end of the movie is that, you know, the adamantium is probably killing him.
Is probably what's killing him. Well, and we establish that even though they are superheroes, they get old
yeah.
and degenerate. We start off, it's 2029,
mm-hmm.
and I guess there haven't been natural mutants born mm-hmm. in the last 30 years or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, that's the whole thing about mutants is they're just born out of nowhere and we're not sure how.
Yeah, and so Logan, who's played by Hugh Jackman, aka Wolverine, he's seemingly not well, as we have talked about. And he's working as a limo driver near the Mexican border. And he lives with Charles Xavier, played by Patrick Stewart, and an albino, played by Stephen Merchant, who is of office fame and an idiot abroad. The three of them are living in, like, this abandoned, like, industrial plant.
A collapsed water tower.
Oh, a collapsed water tower. He's working to save money because he's going to buy them a boat. And I just thought, God, like... I did see one X-Men movie a long time ago, and they were in a lot different circumstances, you know, mm-hmm. like fancy and mm-hmm. high tech and just like rich and like, God, how far they have fallen. So they're just like basically living in the dirt
yeah.
and they're old and just poor. And it's so sad.
The first scene, I think, in this movie is so brilliant. The first fight, because it sets up three things. Number one, we're going to have cursing in this movie. Number two, we're going to see how brutal this movie is. And then thirdly, he should have been able to dispatch those guys in like 2 seconds.
But and so
the fact that they get him down a couple times or kicking him and all that. So we see that this is Logan still.
But he's degenerated.
But he's not. He isn't Wolverine anymore.
I had the thought. You made me watch The Wrestler a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And it totally like made me think of that. And then when I went and looked at it, I mm-hmm. guess that was one of the influences.
Yeah, it was one of the inspirations.
So I got it. So Professor X, he's not well, which is crazy because you think, like, you're a superhero. You're invincible. And at once, you know, he had this great, school, right? And all these mutants
And he paid for everything. He was incredibly rich and powerful.
And now he's got dementia. He's 90 years old. He needs help to go to the bathroom. He has a wheelchair. You know, it's just really sad. Logan has been working to also get him this medication that keeps him. Professor X says it's to keep him, asleep and hazy. And there's something we learn that, like, Logan doesn't want Professor X to remember.
They established a little later that his mind is now considered a weapon of mass destruction because before
he could control it.
Now that Alzheimer's and dementia, and I forgot what the third thing was, is degenerating seizures. His mind.
So Logan's a little bit late getting the medication. Professor X has this seizure. But the thing is the seizure doesn't just affect him. Because of his telepathy, it affects all humans and mutants in a 100-mile radius or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's having one of those. And, you know, Logan is fighting through being paralyzed to get it was like a la Pulp Fiction where they take the injection and shove it in the chest and then mm-hmm. it stops. That's what they're trying to prevent happening. Mm-hmm. And he can only get the pills and the injections a little bit at a time. And the albino even says, this isn't enough. This is only going to hold us for a couple days. He is now playing the role of caregiver. I read later how they talked about how they wanted to kind of show different sides that we'd never seen before. And I was like, oh, this is awful. Oh my God, I can't do this.
X-Men movies have made a lot of money, but haven't been very good. At this point, before they sign on to the movie, both Patrick Stewart, Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman are both getting old. So Hugh Jackman was like, look, I'm not doing this unless it's something new. Mm-hmm. And this is probably my last go around. Patrick Stewart said the same thing. And then they both did it and they're like, okay, we're done with the character because we're not going to do better than this movie.
It's a movie that just so happens to have superheroes in it. And so it was crazy to see the decline and the breaking apart, the breakdown of a character. And it is new because I have never seen that before. Like, what is a superhero at the end of their life look like? Mm. You're telling me that Logan Wolverine is like 200 years old mm-hmm. and, you know, Professor X is only 90 years old. He's like way older than him, mm-hmm. but he's like, that's like his father figure. And mm-hmm. I could see, you know, when someone's at the end of their life and you're like taking care of them, like just watching like the role reversal, you know, like the frustration of trying to take care of someone. You're frustrated with them because they're sick mm-hmm. and they're not the person that they were. And then they're frustrated with you because you're not doing it right and because they're like how they are and just like everybody's frustrated. And I mean, I haven't watched many superhero movies, but I've never seen that before in a superhero movie.
Yeah.
So it was much more of, this is my role now and I'm not who I used to be. God, I can't do this. My glasses are fogging up.
Yeah. Yeah, it was beautifully portrayed by both Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart. You totally nailed that relationship that they really delve into.
Yeah.
And there's like three more levels of tragedy, but I'll save that to the end.
Can't handle it.
Okay.
Okay. Logan mm-hmm. is being stalked by this woman named Gabriella because she's recognized him as Wolverine. She keeps asking him for help and he's just like, forget it. Leave me alone. And so one of his limo rides, this weird guy jumps in his limo and he has a metal hand. His name is Pierce and he works for a biotech company called Transigen. Yep. So he's like, hey, I'm looking for somebody who's looking for you. Her name's Gabriella. And Logan's like, get out of my car. I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, okay, well, here's my card. And if she contacts you, call me. Gabriella finds him. I guess she calls for a limo ride. Mm-hmm. That's how she gets him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she's staying at this like motel, this like rundown motel, and he shows up and he sees it as her and he's like, forget it. I'm not, you know, not, I don't want it. I don't want to be involved in whatever it is. So she's like, me and this little girl, her name's Laura, played by Daphne Keene. We need a ride to North Dakota. And he's just like, I can't help you. You know, he's going to take care of Professor X. So she's like, I'll pay you I have cash. We need to get there by this time because that's when, you know, the passage is going to happen. He, again, is trying to save for this boat, and they want to be on a boat in the middle of the ocean where, if, I guess, Professor X has a seizure, doesn't affect anyone. Did I guess that right?
You are correct.
What did he call it? The seascaper? The sun catcher?
I think it was the sun seeker.
Sun seeker, yeah. He goes, fine, I'll come back and I'll pick you up. So he goes home and he's you know, getting everybody ready for, you know, that he has to go. And she texts him. She's like, please hurry. And he's like, I'm on my way. And he tells Professor X, you know, hey, I'm going to go do this job and then we'll have our boat. And so he drives back over. And when he gets there, the door's been kicked in and she's dead. He goes in the spot where is a secret spot that she had pulled the money out of. He finds her phone. So he takes it because he had texted her. So I'm assuming, like, to get rid of the evidence that he was involved. Gets in his car and he drives back to the plant. Mm-hmm. The tipped over water tower. He gets back and we realize that Laura, the little girl, has stowed herself away in the limo. Professor X is all of a sudden up and in his wheelchair and he's like, Logan, because he's been having visions or been communicating with her.
Yeah, the inference is that Professor X had been reaching out because he had devoted his whole life to saving mutant children and taking them from society so they can control their powers. And
you're
they
gonna
can
start me again.
I know there's levels of tragedy I haven't talked about yet, so
don't talk about
it. Yeah, so he's been it's been clear that he's been communicating with the girl.
Okay. And he's like, oh, isn't it wonderful? She's here and she's a mutant. And he's like, there's no mutants. What are you talking about? No. And he's like, I don't want this kid around. Unfortunately, Mr. Pierce shows up and he's like, I want the girl. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Get out of here. They have a big fight, knocks him out. I can't believe he did this. He tells the albino to go drive him out and dump him in a ditch and then text me when you're done. Yeah. And I'm like, what if he wakes up? What are you doing?
It is a big plot hole. It's probably one of the biggest plot holes of the whole movie. Why doesn't he just kill him at that point? Even if he's in a hurry to get Professor X and the girl out of there.
Just kill him.
Just kill him.
You've
real
killed
quick.
Killed everyone else.
Yeah, it hasn't been an issue for the rest of the movie.
It's your problem. Yeah. Caliban goes and dumps him in a ditch. We find out that he is not knocked out. And so then we don't know what happens to Caliban. But Caliban is now in Pierce's control. So then Pierce shows up with thugs.
He's got this army with them.
Mm-hmm. They all have like cyborg robot parts.
They, at the end of the movie, they call them by what they are. So their name is the Reavers. Basically, he's got this robot army that goes and finds and kills mutants. Okay. So yeah.
Logan is already freaking out and trying to get Charles in the car. So he throws him in the limo, throws his wheelchair in the limo, and he tells Laura, stay here. And Charles is like, what about Laura? And he's like, no, you know, forget it. I don't need to deal with that. I need to protect you. You're my priority. So the guys show up and Laura is sitting inside eating cereal. They walk in and she turns around, looks at him, and then we are outside and we hear screaming and gunshots. And she comes outside, she's got someone's head, and she throws it on the ground. And we realize she's a little Wolverine. She's got the hand swords and then she's also got a foot claw as well. They fight, kill everybody, incapacitate Pierce. Logan realizes that she's a mutant, and so he basically, like, he pulls the car up to her and she jumps in the sunroof because he's like, she's fine, she's a mutant, she'll be fine. He runs the fence and the fence comes down with the, like, they cannot get out because the fence is, and so he uses the fence as like a whip to like get the rest of the guys, and then he goes through the gate part. And then, like, outruns a train and then, like, goes in front. I knew he was going to go in front of the train. Goes in front of the train. And then the train's really long. So, like, they can't get to him. And so then I was like, why are you sitting there? Drive away. So they drive away. Mm-hmm. And they start their road trip.
Because this train is miles long.
A la Romeo and Michelle.
What's really interesting is originally in the script, they were just going to burst through the fence. Uh-huh. And the director realized, he's like, that can't happen. Like, that's an A-team moment. That's what everyone's expecting. We have to figure out the fence can't come down. just to prove how ineffectual Logan is now and how this isn't your typical the hero can just do no wrong movie.
So we've started the road trip a la Romy and Michelle. Look out, North Dakota. Here we go. Pierce has actually captured Caliban. And he's basically going to torture him until he agrees to track Logan and Laura because he has tracked mutants before. So they're in the car, they're in the road trip, and Logan is watching a video that's on Gabriella's phone, and the video explains that she works for this biotech company called Transigen, and she's, like, showing him the stuff that's going on there. Pierce also works for this company, and that's why he's after her. They are creating children, soldiers, from mutant DNA, and raising them to be killing machines. Anytime the nurses show any kindness or, like, celebrate a birthday or have a Halloween costume, they get in huge trouble because these children are not here to have their boo-boos kissed and loved. They're here to kill. Mm-hmm. The only problem is that the children don't want to kill. They realize that this program is a flop, and so they start to try to destroy the children. Mm-hmm. And so, God, I hate this movie.
Aww.
So Gabriella and the other nurses, she says, they thought we were too poor and too stupid to understand. We were poor, but we were not stupid. I knew what they were doing.
Oh, yeah. That's such a great line. And then the way she ends it at the end.
Oh, when she says she's not my daughter, but I love her.
You may not love her, but she is your child.
But please, I beg you, please bring her to safety. So anyway, there was the funny part. They stop at a convenience store, and she's just walking around, and she's just taking chips, and she's taking drinks, and she's taking Skittles, and she takes sunglasses, and the the worker there is just like, hey, you gotta pay for that. And she's about to kill him. And Logan comes in, and he's like, hey, no. Like, she's a puppy dog. Then he squirts her with water.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. No. You guys got any phone chargers? And then he takes the phone charger.
Then he steals phone chargers and a bunch of cigars and leaves them.
And then they leave. It was really weird watching this because I don't know what it is about this child. She totally reminded me of our daughter.
Not the killing. And
no, not the killing.
Knives and the feet and the
hands. Just the little pouty face. She didn't have any lines for a very long time. And so she is just so expressive with her eyes. She was amazing.
Yep, she does what she wants.
But she does what she wants. And so it was funny because I turned to you a couple times and I was like, are you getting uncomfortable? Because I feel a little, I don't want to say this, but she reminds me of our daughter who does what she wants.
I would imagine most people with 6 or 7 year olds or 5 year olds are going to be see some very familiar scenes.
Okay, good. I was just like,
movie.
Oh my God. But I think it made me love her even more.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but I loved her. Metal skeleton and all. They decide to stop in Oklahoma City. They stay at the Harrah's because they need a few hours sleep, a change of clothes, and he needs to change the car because they pull the limo up to the valet and it's got bullet holes and
so
no grill.
Wrecked, yeah.
And he's like, hey, keep it out front. They get to the hotel and Laura and Professor X are just getting closer. It's really sweet. It's like mm-hmm. grandfather, granddaughter. And
they're watching the movie Shane, that tragic cowboy movie.
Yes,
and
the one tragic cowboy movie I've seen.
And Patrick Stewart actually improvs the line where I saw this movie for the first time when I was your age, because in real life, Patrick Stewart saw that movie when he was about her age.
Oh, that's really sweet. Logan's a big fat grump, and Professor X is like, yeah, I don't think you need to explain loss and extreme, pain to her, Logan. Mm-hmm. She gets it. I mean, she had Gabriella, but, like, she's had a horrible life. And
it's Professor X's last student. You can tell that it's his last.
I bought. Logan's going through Laura's stuff. He finds X-Men comics in mm-hmm. her bag. Somehow he's got her stuff with him, and he goes out to get another car. And he's trying to just buy, like, a car with cash. Like, just give me the car. I gotta go. And they're like, well, these tires are bald. You gotta get new tires. He's like, fine. How long is that gonna take? An hour. Great. So he goes to a bar. And
it is Logan. It is Wolverine. So yes, he goes to a bar.
He's looking through the comic book. It mentions Eden. And it talks about North Dakota. And there's, like, coordinates on the package of money that Gabriella gave him. He looks at the coordinates that are in the comic book with the coordinates that are on this envelope of cash. And he realizes, oh my God, she got this story out of a comic book. This isn't real. He comes back to the hotel. And we are in the middle of another Professor X seizure. And the whole hotel is paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And there's just, like, this ringing bell sound. It's paralyzing him, too, but he can kind of fight through it. Mm-hmm. So he gets up to the room. All of the assassins are there. He very brutally kills everybody. He injects Professor X and then the seizure's over. So they all haul butt into the new truck and they get out of there. Just as Pierce and the robot army show up. So they're on the freeway and there's these self-driving cars and there's also this other family and they're in a truck and they're hauling horses. I guess the self-driving truck almost causes an accident and makes that family end up in a ditch. The horses are running across the highway. And so Professor X is like, we got to help them. And so he does this little, you know, telepathy and all the horses calm down and they walk back to the people.
Yeah, Logan's like, someone will come along. And Professor X says, yeah, we came along.
Logan and Laura get out of the car and he's like, oh, do you guys need help? And he helps shove them out of the ditch. And then we realize it's Soul Glow guy from Coming to America.
I'm sure Eric LaSalle would rather be remembered for ER, but hey, anything for a paycheck.
I don't know. If I was him, I'd be like, yeah, I'm Coming to America, Soul Glow guy. Soul Glow and his family are like, oh, wow, thank you so much for helping us. Do you want to come have dinner at our house? And Logan's like, no. And Professor X is like, yes. And then I knew we were in trouble. I was like, oh, God, this whole family's going to be gone now. They go to the house and they have dinner. And it's so funny. I love the scene. Laura's at the table and, like, you know, she doesn't know how to act like a human. And so she's, like, shoving as much corn in her mouth as she possibly can. And, like, she grabs the bowl of corn and she's just going to take the whole bowl. And he, like, takes the bowl away from her. Everybody's watching the exchange that keep happening.
He's forcing her to use a fork. He's like
but not talking. Oh, it's like a little puppy dog who's misbehaving. And and so they have dinner and then they offer them to stay the night and I'm like, no, don't stay the night.
Yeah, that
everyone's gonna die.
That dinner scene is beautiful, also improvised. Those
really,
yeah, because they both played the characters each for like a decade.
I love when that happens.
Yeah, it's
the best.
Beautiful. Talking about, because this is the moment that Wolverine and Professor X kind of make up. Like, this is the moment where they've been so frustrated with each other.
Yeah.
Which is why Professor X wanted this to be a family moment. He wanted to have a, you know, because he knows his time's almost up.
Yeah, he wanted to have this dinner.
Yeah.
Even though everyone's going to get killed.
Possibly.
I was like, they're all going to die. So, unfortunately, things go very wrong. Oh, God, it's so sad. Professor X. He's like, I had the loveliest night. And he's like, and I don't deserve it because of what we find out what happened, you know, like 6 years ago was that he had another one of his seizures and like a bunch of people got hurt and killed.
And X-Men.
He tells Logan some nice things.
So he thinks he's saying this all to Logan.
And doesn't he tell him he's proud of him or he understands him now or something like that? And then he gets shanked in the heart. And you're like, what? Is this a dream? And it's like old style Wolverine. So you're like, what is happening? And he handcuffs Laura. He basically annihilates the family. It's so sad. And we see that Pierce is there, his army's there, and a man named Dr. Rice is there. And Dr. Rice is the whole movie. I was like, who is that guy? I can see him in my head. He was like a villain or something. He was like super intense and he had like this long hair. I could not figure it out. I looked through his whole IMDb and I was just like, I don't know. And then he's on one episode of Absolutely Fabulous. So I clicked on it and I went, oh, that's where he's from.
I love how it's this big villain and it's ab fab.
That's why you were like, I'm going to go to bed. You're going to go to bed. And I was like, no, I have to figure out who this guy is. So the Wolverine that we've been seeing, the young Wolverine, is called number 24.
X-24, yeah.
Because after they scrapped the kid experiment, they started.
The girl is X-23. So, yeah.
Did they have a 22 and a 21 and, like, a 20?
That's what's inferred by it, yeah.
Oh, my God. Number 24 seems to not be able to speak and just seems full of rage and just is, like, a machine and unstoppable. So Logan tries to take him down.
Soul Glow gets in his truck. So, like, you know, fighting this camper truck just comes out of nowhere and just rams X-24 into, is it a tree?
He's in a thresher.
So he rams him into the thresher. He shoots X-24 like point blank range with his shot, and then he dies. Like, he lost his soul glow.
Laura is laying on the ground and she's, you know, hogtied. She's screaming. And so Logan goes and gets her. Professor X at this point has had his last moments with Logan. So he didn't die. You know, Logan ran up and got him and brought him into the truck. And so they have a last moments together.
He says something about Laura. I don't remember what he says, but basically take care of her.
Yeah, take care of her. Ugh. And then he dies. So then they get to a place and he buries them. And He's like, well, there's nice water nearby. And he's like crying. And Laura earlier at the casino had seen these mannequins holding hands. So she tries to hold his hand, but he's mad. So he like takes her hand off of his hand, and he has a freaking tantrum in the middle of the road and passes out. So he wakes up in a doctor's office and finds that Laura had put him in a truck and drove to this local doctor. And so the local doctor is like, I know who you are. You know, I patched you up, but there's like something really, really wrong with you. And you really need to like go to the hospital because you're dying. And he's like, no, I don't need to do that. I know what's wrong with me. It's fine. You know, get me out of here. They get in the car. And Laura's like, okay, we're going to go to North Dakota. And he's like, I'm not taking you. And he's like, it's fake. It's not real. And then she starts talking. He's like, you talk? And then she starts screaming at him in Spanish. And he's like, oh, God, like, you didn't talk this whole time. And now you won't shut up.
I was reading on a website. It's along the lines of like, yes, I talk. But why would I talk when you keep are so mean to me and you keep yelling at me and you keep trying to leave me everywhere? And like,
and she makes this face that I was like, oh, now I know this is our child.
Yeah.
When our child gets pissed off. Mm-hmm. And wants to hit you, but knows that she's not allowed to hit you, gets all up in your face with the grizzly bear, like, she makes the face. And I found the picture online. I'm going to post it. I read later that in the first couple of drafts, Laura talked, and they didn't want her to be like a, you know, a little kid sidekick. So they made her mute
up until that point.
So he basically takes her to North Dakota to shut her up. Mm-hmm. And he's not in any good shape. He wakes up and they're at Eden. They're giving him this serum that I guess they got at the Dr. Rice's. And he's like, I'm not taking that. That makes you crazy. And they're like, yeah, if you take it in big doses, but we're giving you small doses to heal your body.
And it's working.
And you're getting better. And he's been laying there for like 2 days. All of these kids that were in that experiment, they had up until this time to get to this place because they're going to have safe passage across the border into Canada. Logan's kind of decided, I'm not going to go with you, Laura. And Laura gets pissed off about it. He says this line about, like, you don't understand. Everybody I care about, bad things happen to them. And she turns around and she goes, well, then I guess I'll be fine. And walks away. And we both went, ooh. She finds this, like, bullet. And she's like, what is this? And he's like, oh, it's the adamantium.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what's wrong. Adamantium, but yeah, okay.
And he says, yeah, it's the stuff that is inside of me. It's probably what's killing me. And so I was thinking about, like, you know, shooting myself with it one day. And Laura had said earlier that, you know, Charles told me that you're trying to die and that he told me not to let you.
Another very tender scene. He's having a nightmare. He wakes up. He asks her,
do you have nightmares?
Do you have nightmares? She says, yes, you know, people hurt me. And he says, mine are different. You know, I hurt people. And so she says, I hurt people too. Logan says, well, you're going to have to learn how to live with that. And she says, well, they were bad people. And he says, well, all the same.
Yeah.
So, which is the theme of the movie, which is just insane. Like, you know, if you're going to have that much brutality, you need to have that other side.
Yeah. So the day comes, he wakes up, the kids are gone. He kind of is walking around Eden and he sees these drones. And he looks through the telescope that they've had set up and he sees, like, Pierce's, like, vehicles. And he's like, oh, crap. I don't know what kind of head start they had on him, but he starts running. But before he starts running, he grabs that serum that he's not supposed to take a lot of. So he takes off running and he's not doing very well. And so then he stops and he takes almost all of the serum. And then he's like, and he catches up to the kids, and the kids are being run down by Pierce and his army. He's fighting all the men, and Laura's fighting the men, too. Mm-hmm. So they're just chopping heads off. And so then Logan tells Laura, you know, you'll know when. And so she goes and hides, and he walks around to reveal himself to Pierce and starts fighting Pierce. Mm-hmm. And Pierce is like, oh, you took all that serum, huh? Because they find it in the woods somehow. And so he's like, oh, yeah, that's wearing off, though. Laura, like, ambushes them. 24 is there. Laura fights 24. 24 and Logan get in this one-on-one battle. The children all get together and use their powers to do away with Pierce with grass.
And electricity.
And electricity.
And, like, they're all using all their
freezer
powers.
Freezer burn. And
yeah. They drop a whole tanker truck
on top of
24, and then you hear him starting to get out. Yeah, and so Logan's like, go. Yeah. And so they all take off except for...
she doesn't want to leave him because she knows what's going to happen. It's one-on-one, and it ends up he gets impaled.
X-24 impales Logan on this huge tree.
And basically, like, he has run out of healing properties. So then all of a sudden, 24's head blows up, and it's because Laura still had that bullet, so she sees that there's this gun laying around. So she puts the bullet in the gun, and she shoots X-24 with the bullet, and that's the only thing that kills him. But Logan is still impaled on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So she runs over there, and he's dying. But not before she calls him Daddy.
And he says,
so this is what it feels like. The kids come back, and they have a little funeral for him. And she takes the cross that they made, and she forms it, and she turns it over so it's an X for X-Men. Mm-hmm. And then they run off to the border.
Yeah.
And I started bawling my head off.
Well, since you're not bawling enough, let me explain to you another part that you don't
know. I don't know if I can handle it.
So in the second Wolverine movie, there's a character called, I think, Yukio, who has the ability to foretell people's deaths. Wolverine asks her, so how do I die? She says, you're on your back, covered in blood, with your heart in your hand. He dies on his back, impaled by the tree, his blood everywhere, with his heart, his daughter holding his hand.
Can we just get Please to hold. The rating? I mean, I basically said all the things that I... kind of were like thinking of, and I'm bawling my head off. So, like, still, this is the worst chick movie I've ever seen. I have to give it 2 thumbs up. Because it was just, I mean, yeah, it was like really violent and gory, but it was just beautiful and tragic and coming to terms with your mortality.
Yeah, the relationship between parent and
being redeemed at the very parent end and father and by love.
Are you glad you did see it
once? Yeah.
Okay, I'll take that.
Is this like what I look like at the end of Help?
Yeah, I mean, the only difference is that
no mascara.
Yeah, and you weren't like that. You were like this for 3 minutes after the Help, and like this is a day later.
No, it was really good. And I love the little girl. She's my favorite. And it was funny, I read a quote that the director said, if anybody was going to steal a movie from Hugh Jackman, it's Daphne Keene. I mean, I don't want to see any of the other, like, Wolverine, Professor X movies, but I'm just so sad that it had to end and that it ended this way.
It was so right on. It was so well done. So.
And I love how you're like, well, you might cry a little.
What an episode, huh?
Yeah, it's real. It was real heavy.
Well, one half of it was heavy, yes.
Yeah, so emotionally just worn out.
So. Jinxies. Sorry.
My eyes hurt.
I love you. I'm
going to cry for the next couple of days. I love you, too. So we needed to...
cleanse the palate.
We were talking about some ideas, and I was like, this was real heavy. We need to lighten it way up. The F up.
So the lightest one we could come up with, one of Corey's favorite movies, that's another one that you guys will hate me for not seeing, and that movie is...
Airplane!
So I've seen just little bits of it, and I was like, eh.
This was like the movie that started spoof movies and of the scene, you know, the scene that is funny in the foreground, but in the background, all this ridiculous stuff is happening. And, like, you know, started the Naked Gun, like, movies and...
Which I love the Naked... Especially the first Naked Gun.
Well, was you're going to love Airplane then.
I think it'll be interesting to see how it aged. Like, that's why I've always been afraid about watching it, is it's like, I know everyone tells me it's, like, the funniest movie. I'm like, but was it, though? It's 1980.
Can I say a funny thing, though? Keith came running into the kitchen. He's like, have you seen Strange Brew? Like, all proud of himself. And I was like, yeah, do you know who I am? Do you know who my father is? Of course, I've seen Strange Brew.
I was so bummed. Yeah, that was the
hoser.
That was my Romeo and Michelle. Out of all the 10 of them, yeah, the 10 or 12 of them, that was when I was like, okay, that's perfect.
Absolutely.
But it wasn't to be.
And I love it.
It's a great movie.
Anyway, so we're going to watch Airplane.
I don't know why. I just love this movie. It is so immature, so horrible. Mm-hmm. And that movie is Basketball.
Which, when you say basketball, you sound like Borat.
Basketball, my wife.
Actually, it has a huge connection.
Yeah.
Because a couple of the stars from Airplane are actually in this movie. And the guy who wrote Airplane also wrote this movie.
That connection I didn't know.
I'm going to tell you something that might make you feel sad.
Okay.
I really liked South Park, like, in its heyday. I went to the Spike and Mike's Festival of Animation, and that was the first time I saw South Park. I love how they always just kind of making fun of people who are all the way over on one side on something. I love Matt Stone and Trey Parker. I saw some of this movie. I don't know if I made it through the whole thing, but I was a little disappointed by this movie.
It's very, I can't remember the exact context of me watching it the first time, but it was with a few other guys, which I think, like, that movie, like Zoolander, I think it's going to be a lot about context and who you're watching it with. So it is so immature.
I like how I compare everything to The Room and you compare everything to Zoolander.
That's probably true. It's probably fair. So, yeah. Yeah, it's really, but this will be good.
Just a little peek into our personalities.
This will be good for us to to watch. And because it was so tough, because, like, spoofs are one of the few things that Corey and I agree on.
Oh, yeah. We were so, like, we just kept saying all kinds of movies. I mean, no, I love the Police Academy movies. Yeah. I love Naked Gun.
Yeah. So, yeah, but that'll be good. So,
yeah, I'm excited. I hope you like it.
Completely palate cleansed from what we did this week. So. Thank you so much for listening.
Yes, thank you for listening to me blubber.
And for me watching a movie that I
hate watching.
Yeah, that's okay. I understand why people love it. I'm not going to hate on it. So yeah. not for me. But yeah, if you want to see the hilarious images that Corey's putting together.
If you want to see our daughter's little face that she makes.
Her angry
face. Another child's face.
Yeah, then we'll have that.
Go ahead and check it out. He Saw, She Saw Facebook page. And then He Saw, She Saw podcast on Instagram.
There you go.
And please, if you are on a platform where you rate and review.
And subscribe and all that stuff.
The rating, I think, or the review is like the thing. I don't know. We really should figure it out by now. This is like the 16th episode.
But we just like talking to each other.
Well, yeah, but I do enjoy talking to you.
I do enjoy talking to you.
But the fact that I go through hours and hours of editing audio, I would like someone else to hear it.
There you go. So please keep listening to us, and we will talk at you next week.
Bye. If anybody needs to make a call, I have a phone. I used that line for years after that movie. Or like, if I was trying to pretend like I was acting like I was cool, I'd be like, hey, you know what, though? If anybody needs to make a call, I have a phone.
With Professor X's death, it is such a tragedy because throughout the whole promise of X-Men is this idea is that mutants are the next step. And they are the next step in our evolution. So Professor X is like, we should be benevolent and kind of help take mankind to its next level. In this movie, Professor X has seen his entire dream die because mutants have started to go away. So Professor X dies thinking that this was all just a blip that meant nothing. You know, we find out later that Dr. Rice has done genetic engineering through different food products to basically dampen down the mutant genes. And so mutants go away. And so now that they've gotten rid of mutants, what Transigen is doing is they're trying to recreate mutants that they control so they can control everything. So that's part of the sadness that permeates the whole movie for X-Men fans. Is it's like they were supposed to be the future. And they ended up being like a cosmic joke at first. But then they're redeemed at the end with the new mutants who race off to Canada.
Didn't he say something about, we always thought we were part of God's plan, but maybe we were God's mistake?
Yeah. Yeah, which is this huge thing. The whole thing of X-Men is it's very similar to the civil rights movement. It's like we are suffering now, and we're suffering more than anybody ever should, so that we can lead man into the next step of humanity.